This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله وسلم وبارك على عبده ورسوله نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته and welcome to Lessons in Fiqh. The hadith number 169 in the chapter that deals with the conditions of Salah was narrated by Abu Marthad Al-Ghanawi and I believe that Brother Noor will read this hadith for us.
Narrated by Abu Marthad Al-Ghanawi, may Allah be pleased with him. I heard Allah's Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam says, don't pray towards grave and don't sit on them.
Don't pray towards graves and don't sit on them. Now, we have a rule in the fundamentals of fiqh, usul al-fiqh, that says that whenever you're forbidden from doing something, it means that it is not accepted. Which means, if you are forbidden from praying after Asr, and you insist on praying, then your prayer would be void and not valid. Another example, a person comes, Abu Malik, and says that I have nadhr. It's an oath that I fast one day. And this man does not fast this day until the day of Eid. And on the day of Eid, he says, I'm going to fast today. So would his oath be fulfilled by fasting that day? No, because it's forbidden for him to fast the day of Eid. And if he does fast the day of Eid, it's not accepted. Therefore, he still has to do and make up for that one day that is an oath that he made it another on himself. Likewise, the Prophet says here in this hadith, that do not pray towards graves. Now he is making this something forbidden. If a person goes into a cemetery and it's Asr prayer and he skipped the prayer with the congregation and he prays in the cemetery, would his prayer be acceptable? From the rule that we've stated, it is not acceptable. It's forbidden for him to pray. If he prays, he has to pray it again once he goes out of the graveyard or of the cemetery. And why is that? This is to protect Islam, to protect you from a possibility that you may associate others with Allah Azza wa Jal. Now, a lot of people would jump to conclusions and say, who would worship a dead person? Who would worship a corpse that died? Well, this question sounds very logical, but throughout the history, we've seen people worshipping dead people, and they're still doing it until today. And this is a sign of the absence of iman, the absence of tawheed, and the absence of a clear mind to tell you what to do and what not to do. In Ibn al-Qayyim says that this is one of the greatest tricks and traps of Satan to Muslims, where he makes them glorify the dead. And this is, you know, you can see this. Whenever you have a scholar or you have a pious person and he dies, Satan immediately comes and say to you that this is a great loss. So we have to bury this nice or good man. And when you bury him, we have to do something extra We have to glorify this man. We have to respect him even after his death. And people start to innovate bits and pieces here and there until they worship this dead person. And this is found in lots of Islamic countries where you have mosques and you have dead people buried inside the mosques. And they claim and say that we don't worship them. But if you see them going around, for example, the grave of Al-Hussein. Al-Hussein is the son of
Ali.
That means he is the grandson of the Prophet ﷺ. And Al-Hussein has been assassinated. He was killed in Iraq, in Karbala. And if you look at the Muslim world, you'd find that there's a shrine for him somewhere in Iran, and another one in Iraq, and a third one probably in Egypt. I don't know if they have anything for him in Syria. I don't know if they have anything for him in Afghanistan.
No, in Afghanistan, the grave of Ali Karamallahu Wajhu.
Okay, now they say in Afghanistan they have the grave of Ali ibn Abi Talib, the cousin of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam. I think it's in Mazari Sharif.
Yeah, Mazari.
Now, this is strange. Ali never ever left the Arabian Peninsula. He was in Iraq. How did his body reach Afghanistan? It definitely did not. But people came and said, well, the Muslims there need, you know, a boost. They have strong Islam. So what can we do to make this strong Islam redirected to bad Islam? Let's put the awliya, let's put these ideas of making this place sacred for them, and this diverts them from the Quran and Sunnah. And he succeeded. If you go to Iran, they tell you that this is the grave of Hussein. And if you go to Karbala or to Syria, they say that this is the grave of Hussein. And if you go to Egypt, they say that this is the grave of Hussein. May Allah be pleased with him. One of the companions of the Prophet ﷺ, his grandson, and one of the masters of paradise. The Prophet said ﷺ that Al-Hasan and Hussein, they were brothers, his grandsons, are the masters of the youth in Jannah. They are the top and the leaders, the head of youth in Jannah. And if you look at this situation, it's not unacceptable. So, do you mean to tell me that his legs are in Iran and his body is in Karbala, Iraq, and his head is in Egypt? This is not acceptable. Then what is? What's acceptable is that Satan comes to people and he tells them to glorify these dead and to think that they have powers, so that you should supplicate to them, you should pray to them, and you should slaughter them. And this is what we call fitna. Allah Azza wa Jal has put us on earth to worship Him. And He put us on earth to examine us. So if we pass the exam, it's heaven for eternity. If we fail the exam, Allah knows what will happen. And what made me say this was that I have friends, I know people, and Allah Azza wa Jal examined them in different ways. There's this man that was married 10 years ago, and until today, he doesn't have any children. So people instruct him, go to the Kaaba, go to the holy mosque, pray to Allah Azza wa Jal that He grants you a child. So the guy goes for 2-3 years, nothing happens. Then this man comes up to him and say, why don't you go to the grave of Al-Hussein in Egypt or in Iraq, wherever you want. The guy has branches, so you can go wherever is convenient for you. Go to Al-Hussein and supplicate there and see what happens. So the guy says, let me give it a try. He goes to the mosque and he sees people rubbing the walls of the chamber and throwing letters or throwing pieces of clothing, and people saying, oh yeah, Hussein, do this for me, do that for me. And the guy gets, you know, the feeling, and he starts saying, yeah, Hussein, grant me a child, grant me a good boy. And bang, Within 9 months, his wife is delivering a healthy, beautiful boy. What would this man say? He would say that, I've prayed to Allah Azza wa Jal in the Kaaba, in the Haram, for 3 years and nothing happened. And look, in less than 9 months, I have a child. Then this is the real power. This is the power of the people. Now it's strong. This is a test from Allah Azza wa Jal, and you've just failed the test, and you're not a Muslim anymore. By calling and praying other than Allah, you'd become a non-Muslim. So one would say and argue, okay, then how did it happen? How did this man got successful in having this child? Who gives a child in the very beginning? It's Allah. Allah Azza wa Jal who grants you this child, grants you health, grants you wealth. So by asking other than Allah Azza wa Jal, do you think that Al-Husayn himself has the power to give you anything? Do you think that the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has the power to give you anything without Allah Azza wa Jal? Definitely not. We are told not to glorify the dead, not to praise them. They're dead. We ask Allah for forgiveness for them, not to go and seek what we want from them. And that is why it's forbidden for us to pray to graves. Do you recall any incident, Fadi, where people started glorifying and praising the dead and then they ended by worshipping them?
Like in the stories of the companions? Or
before? Muhammad?
Yeah, the story that the Quran brought us, Lat, Manat, Uzzat, that they were very great people.
Yes.
After the
Lat, Wal Uzza, they were all people that were good. One of them, for example, Lat used to get dates and put some wheat with it and make a meal for the pilgrims whenever they come. He used to give it to them. And the minute he died, they put a shrine on his grave and they started worshipping him. Before that, we have Abu Malik.
There was five pious people at the time of Sayyidina Nuh.
Yes. And what happened when they died?
The people, first they, they made the statues at like a square in the city.
Why?
To remember them.
Yes. What? To remember them in what?
In good, remember their goodness.
That's exactly the point that Ibn Abbas, may Allah be pleased with him and with his father, told us that at the time of Noah, there were five good people and everybody respected them. And the minute they died, they felt bad about it. So Satan came to them and told them that why not build statues on top of their graves? So whenever you see them, you remember how pious and good they were, so you do exactly like they used to do. And they did so. And after this generation died, new generation came in, and they saw these statues, and they saw how people, admired them and glorified them. So Satan told them, do you know why they've built these statues? Because these people bring rain. So call them, supplicate to them, and they will make it rain on you. So they did so, and they associated others with Allah Azza wa Jal, and they became mushrikeen. And that is why we are told not to have any forms of statues or drawings that may resemble any living creature. One would say, do you think I'm going to worship Mickey Mouse in 5-10 years' time? Or my Pokemon? Well, you will not worship it, but it's forbidden because you don't know what may happen. I believe that we have to break now. Inshallah, we will be right back.
Islam is a comprehensive way of life. It deals with everything. The Prophet ﷺ wanted to empower people. And he wanted them to feel the responsibility. Not just to rely on the state. The companions radiallahu ta'ala anhum, and in particular Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman, Ali, in the beginning they were not pleased and they were not proud to become the Khalifa. These days we see the candidates running to become the emirs. Islamic State has to provide all inhabitants with the basic needs. It has to fulfill their basic needs. One of the main foundations of the Islamic State is to establish justice.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah and welcome back. The hadith we read before the break, hadith Abu Murthad al-Ghanawi, may Allah be pleased with him. The Prophet says, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, don't pray towards graves. And we've gone through this and we said that it is not permissible to pray in a cemetery or in a graveyard, and don't sit on them. And it's forbidden to sit on graves. A question just popped into my mind, and I hope I find the answer to it with you guys. Now, I've read somewhere or the other that the Prophet ﷺ once had a black woman cleaning the mosque. Do you know this hadith? There was this black woman cleaning the mosque, and once she died, and the Prophet was asleep, ﷺ. So they buried her at night. And when the Prophet woke up, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the following morning, they told him about her, and he was angry that they did not wake him up so that he could perform the funeral prayer. And he went to the cemetery, and he asked where her grave was, and he, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, performed the funeral prayer. So, is it possible or was it obligated? Because here it says, do not pray towards graves. Was it obligated, or this one is obligated, mansukh, or do you have an explanation, Mustafa?
Well, I think the Prophet Muhammad ﷺ did not pray to the grave. It was just he prayed the janazah prayer when she was in her grave. But he did not actually pray with ruku' and sujood.
What do you think, Fadi?
I think he was not facing. He was facing the qibla, and the graveyard was behind him. And scholars said it's permissible to pray in this order, as long as you're not praying at the grave.
Abu Malik.
I think, you know, it's Prophet ﷺ, it was something special for him.
Well, actually, what Brother Mustafa said was the right answer, which is, it's forbidden for you to pray normal prayers to a grave, but to pray the funeral prayer is allowed because you're not bowing, you're not prostrating. And to pray a funeral prayer, you have to have the body or the dead person between you and the qibla. So it cannot be performed when he's behind you. It should be, he should be, or she should be in front of you, as in the case of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. Yes, sir.
But isn't it permissible to pray? Say, for instance, you went in to visit the graveyard, and it's time to pray, and there's a mosque far away. Can you do jama'ah at the graveyard next to it? Like if the graveyard is behind you, and you're facing the qibla?
Yes, it's okay.
So it's okay.
Providing you're not praying towards the grave. But again, from the other hadith, scholars say you should avoid praying in the cemetery. You should go out, not within the boundaries, because this may lead a little bit later on, you know, a month or two later, that, okay, the graves are at our back, then on a later stage, they're a little bit on to our right. On a later stage, they become in front of you. So just leave the cemetery. Noor.
What about somebody who has a cemetery inside his house? Is his house considered to be a grave or to be cemetery?
No. Now, this is an awkward question because it's not usual, though there are people that have their burial areas in their houses.
But sometimes I see who stays in the grave as to keep the grave, or to he stays inside he makes he
a grave for himself.
Yeah,
he spends the night there.
Yes, he spends
yeah, this,
the night.
This was reported by some of the scholars in long times, and I don't know if this is a fact or a myth, because it's reported, and you have to, you know, synchronize lots of the things that you read. And it says that there was this scholar, whenever he prayed Isha, he used to have a grave in his house. He used to go in it, lie down, and put a piece of wood on top of him so it's complete darkness. And he's staying there in this ditch until it's the break of dawn. And he's saying, convincing himself, telling himself that, oh, you're dead. Now it's hell or heaven. And you have so many things that you should have done. You have not done them. And when it's the break of dawn, he goes out and says to himself, okay, Allah Azza wa Jal has brought you back again. So let's see what you do. Because when you're dead, you won't have the chance to do this. Now, this is far-fetched. I believe that this is too much. A person goes, and it's an innovation. This is a bid'ah. This is not recommendable. Though some people say it and think that, wow, the guy spent 8 or 10 hours in the grave. Look how fearful he is from Allah. This is not fearful. This is nuts. Instead of spending 9 hours in this ditch, and you should have prayed the whole night prayer. You should have studied ilm. You should have taught people. You should have done something useful in your life. But to sit, to lie down in this grave-like ditch and think that you're doing something good, this is not good. So this is unacceptable. This is an innovation. You should make use of your time. You know, you find people, they call them, they have different names, but you find them in mosques, sitting there for like 20 hours a day, maybe the full day, with beans like, prayer beans like 1,001 long, and they have these strange dhikr, and they open the books, and this is Salatul Fatih Lima Ughliq. It translates to the prayer that opens things that are closed. Well, what is this? Is it a master key? And they say, no, this is a special prayer given to us by Wali so-and-so and by scholar so-and-so, and it's good that it does this, it does that. Is it sunnah? No. It's even more than sunnah. This is the Wali. He's not a prophet. He's a Wali. This is blasphemy. This is kufr. If you think that anyone could be better than the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and they start to make noises and sounds, and they start to say Allah, 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 like thousands of times. What are you saying? Say the name of Allah. We say it like 7,000 times between prayers. What use of that? Said, oh, this is dhikr. Did the Prophet ever say that? I saw some Allah, 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 and he kept on repeating it. He said, no. So how do you innovate in it? This is bid'ah, this is forbidden. And after some time, instead of saying Allah, 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 then they don't go directly by saying the name. They use a pronoun. They say, who, meaning he. So instead of saying Allah, they will say him, him, him. So say in Arabic, who, who, who. What is this? This is a dog-like barking. This is not prayer. This does not relate to Islam at all. So it is definitely not sunnah to put a grave in your house, and instead of lying in your bed, you go down there and lie in it. This is un-Islamic.
But some people used to live in graveyards.
Living in graveyards is different than living in a grave. See, if you work in a graveyard, then you have your house next to a graveyard. Nobody lives inside the graveyard, usually. There are probably poor people, but it's not a place to live in. I don't think it's a very friendly place, you know, to invite your friends and let's have dinner in my place. Where do you live? Next to grave 2003. It was for a serial killer. But if you wish, we can change the scenery to another place. This is not logical or not acceptable, though it's possible. People, you don't know about people's lives, but praying to a grave is forbidden. You should respect the grave, the cemeteries, to the extent that it's forbidden for us to walk on graves with our sandals on. The Prophet ﷺ, though sometimes you have to walk on graves because the whole place is filled with graves, you have to take your sandals off. Now, sitting on a grave is completely out of the question. Sitting on a grave is completely out of the question, because the Prophet told us, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that whoever sits on the grave as if he's sitting on a burning stone, this is a punishment. And this tells you the respect we have for the dead. They're dead, they're history, but we respect the dead. And likewise, how would you think that we would respect the living? Our respect to the living should be even more and more. And all of this, not praying to the grave, is to safeguard the tawheed, to safeguard the monotheism, your belief in the oneness of Allah Azza wa Jal. And that is why there are so places in the Sunnah where it tells us, do not say the following: Allah and so on, Allah and Muhammad. Because in Arabic, when you say Allah wa Muhammad, or Masha'Allah wa Shait, whatever Allah wishes and you, this is associating you with Allah in saying that Allah wishes this and you wish this. And this is not acceptable in Islam. We move on to the following hadith, hadith number 170.
Narrated Abu Sa'id radiallahu an, Allah's Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, when any of you comes to the mosque, he should look, and if he sees impurity or filth on his sandals or shoes, he should wipe them and then pray in them.
Mustafa, this hadith talks about which condition?
This hadith talks about impurity.
About purity, removing the filth. As we recall, that purity is divided into two. And this is essential that you understand this, because then you know what purity is. It's not only performing ablution. This is one part of it. So purity is considered to be removing the filth and lifting the state that you should be either taking a total bath or performing ablution. And in this hadith, it tells us that when you go into the mosque at the time of the Prophet ﷺ, you could also pray wearing your socks, wearing your shoes. Now, we've said that in our times, this is not acceptable simply because the mosques are covered with carpets, and carpets take any dirt that you bring to them when you step on these carpets. So it's not a sunnah, it's not recommendable, you should not do this. And in this hadith, the Prophet tells us that one should look into his shoes. Why? To see if there is any filth in it, any najasa, any impurity. And if there is any impurity, one should remove it. But if there is nothing, then he can pray and he has nothing to do with it. Is it sunnah to pray wearing sandals? Mustafa.
Yes, it is sunnah to wear sandals, because the Prophet Muhammad ﷺ told us to be different from the Jews and the Christians, because they...
The Jews, not the Christians. Okay.
The Jews, because they only pray without wearing sandals.
Barefooted. They pray barefooted. But Muslims can pray both ways, and it's preferable if you have your sandals on and you're praying in a place that does not have any carpets, that you pray wearing your sandals. I'm afraid that this is all the time we have for today's program. I believe, inshallah, that there are a few issues still to be discussed, so we will delay that to until we meet next time. Then, fi amanillah, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.